My Scooter Libby indictment. Smarts and tingles.
Ugh, what did I do? What did I fucking do? And now the fucking shit doesn't work? The buttons?
Life is strange. It'll kick you in the balls when you least expect it. But life is good with Madge Weinstein in it. Yeah, with Madge Weinstein in it. Yeast Radio.
Boy, do I suck today. What the fuck is wrong with me? I'm doing everything fucking wrong today. Fuck my whole. This is Monday and I suck. Should I start over? I'm not going to start over because I got to get this show out the door because I got a conference call at noon. I don't have time for this crap. You'll just have to take what you get, bitches. Fucking listen, turds. Oh, and I got coffee on my goddamn keyboard. It looks like shit. Chauncey shit on the goddamn floor. It looks like there's a little bit of blood in it, but he does that from time to time. It's just because he ate everything. He broke into the dog food the other day. Now let's try this fucking thing again. Let's finish my introduction. Fucking cock. Damn it, Tahoodle.
Okay. God, did I bloat my shit.
The funny thing about that bitch is she still thinks she hot. She still thinks it's 77 and she's on the
lid to a wax. She got a leather, a red leather suit on. What the fuck you going with that shit on? Hey, her period tastes like toothbrush, Robbie.
Stinks good, really, in lesbians and gentlemen.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh, damn. I suck. I swear I'm not doing this on purpose. Yeah, like I really want
to. Spillover.
We interrupt this program.
I got a fucking shit. Oh my god, it's gonna come out. Ow.
Oh,
you fucking shisa.
Holy Christ, was that good.
You're listening to Yeast Radio and Madge Weinstein. My favorite bloated lesbian.
Oh, Jackie, how it turns my vagina every shade of purple, because I'm old, when you do that to me. Do it to me one more time. Do it to me. Listen, normally I would have erased and fixed what you just heard, but I don't have time. I don't. And I'm calling Max today, Max of Karma Bank. I'm very excited about this. He's going to explain what the hell Karma Bank is about, and you're going to have to, you'll hear part of it here. Christ, you'll hear part of it here and part of it later on your own show. Just kidding. Yeah, you'll hear part of it here and then you can listen to yeastradio.com for the rest of this show. I'm just going to do what I can. I'm an old woman. Let's hear Norm's weekly installment. What you got for me, Norman?
Hi, Madge. This is Norm Augustinus from normaugustinus.com down in Florida. Hey, Madge, I'm kind of annoyed, kind of irritated by something, and I thought I would share it with you.
Why
I was shopping
not?
At the mall the other day, and I was inside the Brookstone store. You know what the Brookstone is, Madge? They sell all kinds of gadgets and things, you know? Well, I'm inside the Brookstone, and I got my legs in the calf, ankle, and feet squeezer. I think they call it the eye squeeze. And then I move over to the illuminated mirrors, because I enjoy looking at myself, Madge. And while I'm looking at myself at 10 times magnification, I see this man and this woman standing over by the vibrator display at the front of the store. They're standing by the display at the front of the store, and above the display there's a sign that says The Perfect Gift. Well, they're standing at the vibrator display, and while I'm watching, Madge, I see this woman hand this man this big vibrator, you know? This big vibrator with two vibrating heads on it the size of baseballs, you know? And while he's looking at it, he's acting like he's checking the balance and weight of it, you know? He's moving it up and down, holding it up, examining the craftsmanship, you know, looking at the plug, kind of checking the weight. You know, she's standing next to him looking at him like they're making their first home purchase together, you know? She's just so full of pride, you know, this smile on her face. And I'm thinking, you know, there it is, the foundation to American relationships, the orgasm. And I'm looking into this mirror, Madge, and my mouth is moving, and I'm kind of talking outwardly. They're looking at this vibrator, and I'm thinking, you know, I know what's going on. She wants orgasms. She wants orgasms. She wants him to give them to her or else, you know, and he wants to give her orgasms, you know. Well, they're looking at this new vibrator. They call it a family vibrator. You know, it's for muscles. You know how they always push vibrators for aching muscles. Well, this vibrator, you know, it comes with a built-in onboard audio chip. They call it the Vibadio Model 201B. And it comes preloaded with two songs. I think one of the songs was Backdoor Man by Jim Morrison, and the second song that you could pick on this vibrator was Louie Louie by the Kingsmen. You know, Madge? So it comes with two songs, comes preloaded with two songs as personal muscle massager. You know, the Vibadio Model 201. Soothe aching muscles. You know how they always say that stuff, Madge? There they are, you know? They're looking at this personal muscle massager at the Brookstone store, the Vibadio, and above them is a sign that says the perfect gift. I'm thinking, you imbecile, you simp. You know, go give your woman an orgasm, 201B. Go give her an orgasm, 201. The foundation, the glue to American relationship, the Vibadio Model 201B. And while I'm standing there and while I'm looking in the mirror, I remember this girl. I remember this girl years ago when I was in my 20s. And I'm thinking, you know, I remember when I was trying to give a girl an orgasm. You know, Madge, that was me. That was me in my 20s, Madge, trying to give a girl an orgasm. You know, the glue to American relationships, the foundation, you know. I was in a motel. We're in there making love, Madge, you know. I'm in the standard position. I'm on top. She's on the bottom, Madge. And she's got a vibrator in her anus, you know. She has a vibrator right in her anus. And I'm on top and we're doing it, Madge. You know, we're doing it. You know, I got my dong out. It's extended. It's engorged with blood. We're making love, Madge. She's got her vibrator in her anus. And we're listening to our song, Madge, on a portable stereo cassette player. And we've set incense cones up. Our song, Madge, Love to Love You Baby by Donna Summer. Donna Summer, Love to Love You Baby. You know that song, Madge? I love to love you, baby. When you're laying so close to me, there's no place I'd rather you'd be than with me here. I love to love you, baby. Do it to me again and again. You put me in such an awful spin, in a spin. I love to love you, baby. Lay your head down real close to me. Soothe my mind and set me free, set me free. I love to love you, baby. And while we're doing it with Donna Summer, I get a searing pain into my testicles. And what has happened is the vibrator hatch, Madge, you know, the dildo hatch, the screw down dildo hatch at the base of the dildo came off, and 2D batteries torpedoed into my testicles. You know, they torpedoed into my testicles while we were making love, Madge, you know, like a submarine firing off two torpedoes, you know, like they've plotted a solution and they went right into my balls, you know, right into my balls. They've plotted a solution and 2D batteries hammer into my testicles at different intervals. You know what I mean? It was like the captain of a World War II submarine plotting to achieve the proper firing solution on my balls, and he had done so, you know? That's when I was trying to give a girl an orgasm, you know? That was my experience with a vibrator, Madge, a dildo, you know, a vibrator, you know? That's what I got for my trouble, you know? 2D batteries slamming into my balls while I'm trying to copulate. I'm going to give her an orgasm, you know? I'm going to give her an orgasm just like this simp, you know? This simp looking at this new revolutionary vibrator, you know? The Vibadio Model 201B. Comes preloaded with two songs on board, you know? Comes preloaded with two songs on board, an audio chips inside, and Louie Louie by the Kingsmen and Backdoor Man by Jim Morrison. And he's looking at it, she's looking at it. They're going to get an orgasm. Plug it in. You know, plug it in. Give her an orgasm. The Vibadio Model 201B. That's about it, Madge. This is your favorite correspondent, Norm Augustina, saying, plug it in. Give your woman an orgasm.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
Girdle spillover.
I did that a minute sooner than I should have. I apologize, Norman. Norman. What the fuck is your problem about orgasms? If you can't give a woman an orgasm, then you need a Vibadio or Vibradio. You need to use that, because I can understand your penis is small and you can't satisfy a woman because women a lot of times have large vaginas, and I heard you're into big women. Hint. But, you know, if your penis isn't big enough to hit the old letter G, then just get one of these Vibradios, something else at Brookstone Shop or Image sells them. I think even the Walgreens sells vibrators nowadays. And stick it in her cut and spin it round till she has an orgasm, for Christ's sake. And tell her this, listen, tell her this, tell her, listen, don't argue with me. I need you to know, don't fake it till you make it. Just tell me when you're having an orgasm, and we can all have a nice time. You know, all two of us. I'm not making sense. Anyway, I have to call Max, but I wanted to play something. Somebody sent me this.
I want the president to look across the country and find the best man, woman, or minority that he can find.
Oh, that was already on The Daily Show. Sorry, I try not to copy. So I just see now breaking news, ticker, 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 that Bush nominated Scalito to the Supreme Court. This is the one that everybody said not to, and at least anybody with a brain said, please don't pick this asshole. Scalito is his name. That's a combination of Scalia and Alito, which is this guy's name, Alito. One to watch. He's going to be worse than probably imaginable. So that'll be nice. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, a Nevada Democrat, said he was disappointed with the pick and that the Senate, which must confirm the pick, will now have to determine whether Alito is too radical for the American people. Well, we're all fucking nuts. You know what? Just might as well just do it. I'll get my Polish passport, get the fuck out of the country. What the hell? You can all just enjoy your Soviet Union spillover. Christ's sake. I've had it. All right. Should I call Karma Bank Kui? Karma Bank with a Q. I'm not even gonna start with you, general audience. I'm not gonna start with you. Let's just call. I'm gonna not start with you. Oh God. I hope I'm doing this right.
Bonjour. Vous êtes sur la messagerie France Télécom du 0144.
Oh, now he's calling.
Votre correspondant est déjà en ligne. Veuillez laisser un message. Somebody's calling my cellular.
This is getting too much now. Maybe I'll edit some of this shit out. This is ridiculous. I shouldn't do this. People from the radio, I should give better. Let's try this bonjour shit again. Don't give me that bonjour.
Hello.
Listen, I got a recording. It said bonjour and all this shit. How am I supposed to speak French? Doesn't that recording know I'm not in France?
Everyone should be able to speak French.
Well, listen, you know, this is America. We're not allowed to say France. I think I get to go to Guantanamo now because of you and that lady.
French is the language of diplomacy. French is the language of love. If America spoke more French, they wouldn't find themselves in the problems that they find themselves in.
How so?
The American language is very... you know what Charles V said? He said that he spoke French to his mistress, he spoke German to his dog, and he spoke English and American to his horse.
Oh, see, I heard the same joke when I lived in Holland, but it was that he spoke Dutch to his horse. Just insert Germanic language here, I guess.
Yes, well, anyway, I mean...
Right. So I'm recording the show now, and here's how it works. What recording is, I've had a massively fucked up show, but I don't have time to redo it, so we're just going to deal with it. I took a huge dump this morning. I shat probably 20 pounds of bloat, and then...
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then my dog
shit. Fantastic news. We all rejoice.
Now, how does this figure into your economic world? Do you have to get out your visor with the green tint and then take a pencil and figure some shit out and tell me how this affects... Karma?
No, you're purging yourself of all of your misperceptions and preconceptions that you no longer need.
But I can get biodiesel out of that or something in effect.
You could sell it to some biodiesel gas stations, perhaps, and they could convert that into some kind of energy producing substance, I would imagine.
Oh, sounds wonderful. So here's how it works. So I'm 13 minutes into the show. I got to fill 23 minutes for Sirius, and then I go, which means about 10 more minutes, and then then we can keep talking. And that'll just stay on Yeast Radio for the rest of it. So I'll tell you when I have to. I'll do like some nice little wrap up, and then we'll just keep talking after that if you want.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, fine.
So you are the host, co-host, right, of Karma Bank, you and Stacey. And you,
that's right. And Stacey and I co-host the Karma Bank radio blogspot.
Can you explain what it is? Because I sure as hell can't. But yeah, please do.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, there's four basic, I guess, steps, if you will. I mean, the first thing to consider is that we are working, in effect, or Karma Bank is working for the ecology. You know, we take the position that the ecology is our client, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
Then the next thing we consider is that the ecological problems that are developing are caused by corporations for the most part, and that corporations survive on their cash flow.
Uh-huh.
So the question is, how can you cut the corporations off from their cash flow and in so doing cut down their ability to destroy the environment? And the Karma Bank has figured out a way to do this that doesn't cost anybody any money. And on the show, we talk about economic issues, and we talk about these corporations, and we talk about the damage that's being done. But we also try to get to as many people as possible who can participate in this Karma Bank methodology, which doesn't require any money whatsoever, but is a way to deprive these corporations of their vital cash flow and thus take away their ability to destroy the environment, which is... Per Sir David King, the science advisor in the UK, Tony Blair's chief science advisor, the biggest problem, the biggest threat in the world today. Much, much more of a threat than any so-called terrorist threat, according to Sir David King, is the environmental threat.
Well,
and so
I think even the Pentagon has said the same thing, I believe, right?
That's right. The Pentagon has also said that as well. So, you know, this is a way to address this problem that is, I think, it uses kind of banking techniques in a way that have never been used before. And it takes advantage of a couple of quirks in the system.
Okay.
That can be exploited by the average listener to your show or our show to, in effect, empower themselves, or what we like to say, it's a way to monetize your dissent, to put it in economic terms.
How do you do that?
Okay. Well, the way it works is that we have figured out that different corporations have a different vulnerability to the free voice of dissent, the choice, the free, low-cost, activist method, which is the boycott. The boycott effectively doesn't cost you anything.
Right, right.
But the boycott needs to be brought into the 21st century. So what we did was we look at all these different companies and we figure out which company is actually the most impacted by a boycott. And by this we mean the stock price itself. If it's trading at a very high multiple to the amount of business that the company does, then if you were to boycott that particular company, you're having a greater impact on that company than if you were to choose a company that has a lower ratio.
And how do you find out which stock prices are most in line with consumer demand? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, we take the data, which is the price over sales ratio, which is available, easily gotten.
Uh-huh.
But the idea is, if you get enough people to think in this manner, see, it's a two-tier process. If you get enough people to think in this way, that they're going to boycott strategically, what we're hoping to do is to create a situation which I guess you could call hedge fund bait. Okay, now I know, hopefully we can get through all these terms, but this is nevertheless.
You lost me there. You want me to masturbate?
No. This is hedge fund bait.
Okay.
Which is, in other words, a hedge fund is a fund that's very, they're mercenaries.
Uh-huh.
They're mercenaries in the market, and they look for anything, any way to make a dollar, they'll do it. They have no allegiance to any company, any country, or anyone. They're not regulated, really, in any way.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think it's probably a bit of a problem, but for the purposes of you can get these hedge funds effectively if you come to them with the right kind of boycott or bait. They will attack the stock of these companies for you. They will attack the company's stock for you by making all of these negative bets on a company's stock, because they know that you're boycotting the company, you're depriving the company of its revenues, and therefore they will go ahead and start making negative bets against the company, attacking the company's stock effectively.
Oh, I see. So it's more than just a PR thing. This is actually affecting the companies. This is actually affecting the economics of the companies that do environmental damage. Is that right?
It's part of the financial system. You're putting everyone who's concerned about the environment, you're putting their concern into the economy.
Now, how does this hedge fund, I don't understand how a hedge fund, I mean, I understand what you're saying it does, but how does it work? Like, how do you make a bet against a company? I mean, I didn't realize you could do that. I mean, it sounds like a racetrack. I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, there's two ways you can do it. One way is you simply, you buy what's an option, a put option. It's an option contract. It is like a bet. It's like you're going into the casino. You know, the globe is one big, huge financial casino, and people are making bets all day long in one way or another, and you can make a bet on the stock going down. So you make you buy a put option, and if the stock price goes down, the value of your option goes up.
Uh-huh.
So this is just like you were betting against a sports bet, and you were betting against the team winning. You can make those types of bets. I mean, Chicago, right? The White Sox just won the World Series, right?
Right.
Now, there were people who were betting against the White Sox.
Yeah.
Now, they call their bookie.
Yeah.
And they say, we're going to bet against the White Sox. Now, those people lost their money because the White Sox won. Now, but they could, if the White Sox had lost, they would have made their money. Same thing with financial markets. You can make a bet that Coca-Cola stock is going to go down. You call your bookie, or in this case, your broker, and you make that bet. You say, I want to make a bet that Coke stock's going to go down. Your bookie slash broker accepts that bet. And, of course, Chicago is the world's center for the options market. You know, the Chicago Board of Options Exchange is the biggest options exchange in the world. So you call your options broker and you say, I want to make a bet against Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Microsoft. He'll take that bet. And if the price goes down, you make money. The reason you would make that bet is because you heard on Karma Bank that there's now 30, you know, there's millions of people who are boycotting Coca-Cola because they're unhappy with the company. So the revenues are going to go down. So therefore, that bet's going to pay off. And what we tell people who are interested in fighting back against these corporations is to simply focus on the companies that are most vulnerable to a boycott. And this is where when we talk to groups like Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth and Amnesty International, they tend to try to fix everything at one time. You know, they have these huge agendas, these huge programs are trying to fix the whole world at once.
Right.
Instead of just saying, you know what, let's think like a manager of a money manager would think. This is what Karma Bank tries to tell activists, is to think like they do. Think like the enemy. This is the way the enemy thinks. Think like they think, and then do the thing that the last thing in the world that they would ever want you to do, which is to look at their stock price and only their stock price. And because we are educating people about this, the right-wing press in America has gone ballistic.
Uh-huh.
You've got guys now in Washington at junkscience.com who have come out and said that Karma Bank is a threat to the entire economy. And they're calling people up and they're threatening to have them fired from their jobs. I'm speaking at a conference in Germany later this week, and these guys have been calling people up on the phone in America and saying, if you let this guy speak, we're going to have you fired from your job. We're important people. We know people in Washington. And it's really because they know that what I'm saying here is the worst nightmare. If you're a company and you're committing ecological damage and you've got the masses educated about how these financial systems actually work in a way that they can participate, remember, it doesn't cost you a penny to think like this. It's just a matter of changing the way you think a little bit and to attack these companies in a way that they themselves are attacking us, and to make it a fair fight. Make it a fair fight by simply bringing to the equation what we call monetizing your dissent, by saying, look, I have a problem with the way these companies are operating. I'm going to put that dissent into the marketplace using this Karma Bank technique of boycotting only companies that are vulnerable. And if you do so, you will attract those money managers, those hedge fund managers who can make those big negative bets against these companies.
Uh-huh.
And they'll effectively put the companies on the defensive. And now you've got a fair fight on your hands.
Okay.
Now the company can, you know, is in a position of having to either respond to the concerns of the people who are campaigning against it, or you know, they are going to be on the defensive.
And so, give me a quick list of companies that are the ones that you don't like right now.
Okay. Well, yeah. Like on the Karma Bank, we screen companies for the boycott vulnerability.
Uh huh.
And as well as companies that people are taking a position against.
Right.
So number one is Coca-Cola. It's the most vulnerable with the most campaigns around the world.
Uh-huh.
Again, Karma Bank, we're simply the broker. We're saying this is a company that's got a high price-to-sales ratio, and it's got the most people around the world taking a position against it. There's a lot of people who don't like Coca-Cola for a lot of different reasons. We don't get into it. We just say it's got a high boycott vulnerability ratio. There's a lot of people who are campaigning against it, so it's got the single greatest rating.
What are they doing? What are they doing wrong? I mean, to the economy, to the world, what is it that makes them an enemy?
Well, allegedly, they're doing things like in India, they're sucking groundwater out of the ground and depriving us of farmers in India. They are they're selling products allegedly that have insecticides in these products. They are allegedly involved in labor relations in Colombia in a very nasty way. Plus, you know, people are concerned about the company, its health profile, et cetera, et cetera. The point is that they've got millions of people around the world who have joined various campaigns against Coca-Cola. And so we take that into consideration. We say, okay, it's got by far the greatest number of people who come to the site have decided that they have a problem with Coca-Cola. Okay, fine. Is Coca-Cola vulnerable to a boycott? Yes, it is. Put those two things together, it's got the highest Karma Bank rating that we track. Fine. Uh-huh. Then after Coca-Cola comes companies in the top five, you'll find McDonald's, you'll find Exxon, you'll find Microsoft, and Ryanair, Starbucks. So these are companies that people are taking campaigns against, and they all are vulnerable to a boycott. And then so those would be the top names.
And what does Starbucks do? Because I always thought they're supposed to be a happy, you know, hippie company where they go to Grateful Dead shows or something, you know?
Well, Starbucks is, they say that they're really supportive of what's called fair trade coffee.
Uh-huh.
But in fact, less than 2% of the coffee is fair trade coffee.
What does that mean, fair trade? I know you ordered a fair trade latte on one of your videos, but what does that mean?
Yeah, in other words, so the fair trade coffee means that the farmers who are growing these coffee beans get a living, get an amount of money for their coffee that they can live on.
Uh-huh.
And it's a program that's being picked up in different countries and supported in different countries. Starbucks has a tremendous campaign saying we support fair trade coffee. It's a lot of public relations. They're getting a lot of public relations benefit out of it. So a lot of people have some object to this because they're not really, it's more PR than substance, I would say. So there's a lot of static in the community against this.
Uh-huh.
But again, in Karma Bank, what we do is we simply present the economic metrics.
Right.
And we give activists a way to band together and to, you know, as we say, monetize their dissent. In other words, you're taking your, if you've got an issue, let's say, Maz, let's say that you've got an issue with a company. I don't, you know, there could be a company that you have, you could be a part of a campaign. I'm not sure if there is a company. It could be any company. The idea is you have solidarity with other people out there who are also trying to take a position against these companies. These companies, effectively, they're all joined at the hip, in effect, through the global banking system.
Right.
If you have a position with a company, whatever company it is, no matter what these companies, no matter what you're talking about, they're all basically joined to this common banking system anyway. They're all fed with the same cheap money.
Is this the IMF you're talking about? What is that? What you're talking about? The International Monetary? Are you talking about the International Monetary Fund? Is that what you mean?
I'm talking about the fact that most 35% of all the profits for the companies in America come from financing and banking. This is the biggest profit center for these companies in America right now. Like General Motors, for example, they make more money lending money to people to buy cars than they do making cars.
Uh huh.
That's where they make their money. This is where most companies make their money, is in the business of lending money. Even companies that you would never imagine are in this business are using their balance sheet to leverage their balance sheet to borrow money, to lend money, because this game, this huge financing game out there, is fueling the profits of these companies. But my point is that these companies are all essentially joined in the back end through the common banking system. So when an activist takes a position against a company, not only is it a huge company, but it's really, they're taking a position against a system that is commonly joined. So therefore, it makes sense if you're an activist to find some solidarity with other activists and say, you know what, maybe I have a problem with Chevron because Chevron is doing something bad to the ecology because it's in the oil industry.
Right.
But instead of spending the next 6 months campaigning against Chevron, I'm going to join with those campaigners out there who are campaigning against Coca-Cola for 6 months.
Right.
And I'm going to join the Coca-Cola campaign simply because I want to show global corporate community, that we, as an activist diaspora, have the ability to have our monetary input reflected in this economy. This is what we're saying.
So it's sort of like a clearinghouse for dissent, in a way.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Exactly. You've got it.
Uh-huh. So my concern is, how do you know a company is really doing stuff that's wrong versus people say they are? You know what I mean? Like, there's obviously no sort of trial going on. I mean, how do you know that you're not causing damage to a good company, is what I want to know.
Well, I mean, this product, this Karma Bank idea, is a product of the internet age.
Uh-huh.
It's only through the internet that we could get all this data, crunch the numbers, and put it back into the community. And the community, as you know, and the internet, has a very good way of weeding out the wheat from the chaff.
Uh-huh.
You know, eBay, for example, if you're not a good seller on eBay, you get marginalized pretty quickly.
Right.
So the information that comes through the internet is, people are the collective intelligence of the internet can look at this data and look at this information, and then they know people in the area, they talk, they communicate. So a profile emerges.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, in aggregate, the ecology is suffering woefully. It's really difficult for people to deny the fact now that the environment, the ecology, because of global warming and climate change, is really suffering. It's becoming quite clear now.
Right.
The average temperatures are moving up. The increase in hurricanes are moving up, and all this, the weather damage is moving up. All of these things are becoming quite clear. So people are becoming quite aware. And if you don't, all you need to do is look at what the insurance industry is saying, because the insurance industry is really the bottom line, if you will. The insurance industry is saying that climate change and global warming is making it impossible for them to underwrite insurance. For example, they're saying that it's going to be almost impossible for anyone in Florida to buy insurance because of global warming and climate change. So that's not some buddy on the internet
who is
like a Chicken Little running around screaming, sure, oh, the sky is falling. It's the insurance industry, which is a fundamental part of the American economy, saying we cannot offer this service anymore to insure these people. In the UK, there are 200,000 counties.
Uh-huh.
That have been marked as uninsurable now due to flooding, which is a direct result of climate change and global warming. So these things are really happening. So the question then becomes, how can we stop these corporations who are primarily responsible for this?
Right.
How do we stop them?
Okay.
And the only way to stop them, as far as Karma Bank is concerned, is you've got to cut them off from their cash supply, because they feed on cash. If you cut them off from their cash supply,
uh-huh,
then they will no longer have the wherewithal to continue down this path. And the people who are the consumers, thinking in terms of a solidarity and as an aggregate, can apply this pressure in a way that the companies understand, because the companies at the end of the day look really only at one thing, and that's their stock price. That's only they only look at that. So if you can come to them and say, look, we're organizing ourselves in such a way as to look at your stock price and how the risks of what you're doing may not be reflected, you're going to catch the attention of the trillion-dollar global hedge fund industry, who then is going to start making negative bets, and then you've got a fair fight. So the company is then going to either change its behavior or it's going to do some other things. But at least it's a fair fight, because right now it's not a fair fight.
Right.
They've got all the cards, and we're taking all the risk. Exxon doesn't pay hardly anything for the oil they extract. They pay hardly anything for the carbon dioxide emissions they emit.
Can you explain this?
We have to suck it down.
We're
the ones who are paying the price. We're taking the risk. Why should we take the risk?
Can you explain something to me?
Shareholders make money. It should be fair. There should be equal risk and reward.
Right.
Unless Exxon wants to give every single American a share of Exxon stock as compensation for the risk we're taking. Have they suggested that? I mean, that's what they should be doing if they were being fair.
Max,
they should give every single person a share of the stock.
Oh, so I just want to ask you, while we're on the subject of Exxon, there's something I really don't understand. I think a lot of Americans don't understand this. The oil, the gas prices are, you know, of course, gone way up, but Exxon has record profits. How does that happen? I mean, is there no regulation? Or I just don't understand that at all.
Well, in America, there's this idea which became very popular during the Reagan years of trickle-down economics, which is that if you let the biggest and richest get bigger and richer, that some of that money is going to trickle down and we're all going to benefit. I call it the golden shower approach.
I call it aristocracy.
It's an aristocracy. So in other words, this is the mentality that's running the corporate, like, you know, the Exxons. Yeah. And of course, they did a fantastic job in getting themselves into the top political office.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney obviously went right from Halliburton. Halliburton, right. All those no-bid contracts in Iraq, all those no-bid contracts in Louisiana, he went right from Halliburton right into the White House.
Right.
That's not a democracy. That's a plutocracy.
And Condoleezza, I believe, wasn't she on with one of those oil companies, too, on the board, I think?
Yeah, that's right. She served on the board. This is what happened, I think, you know, looking back, is that if you remember back in the mid to late 90s, you had this incredible possibility for a digital revolution economically in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
But that is a very big threat if you are an entrenched monopolist like an Exxon, a Coke, or a Microsoft. You don't want all these entrepreneurs and all these dot-coms and all this new blood, and especially the spokesperson of that time, if you recall, Al Gore was very vocal about the possibilities of what the Internet could offer. And if you're in the oil business or the tobacco business or the nuclear energy business, you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that this guy and these people don't get into power, because they're going to, in fact, you can economically introduce high efficiency cars, hybrid technology. You can do all these things if the will is there, which would totally marginalize these big oil companies.
Right.
So if you're in these oil companies, you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that you hold on to power. So they're very, without any embarrassment whatsoever, they just basically did almost like a leverage buyout of the White House. It's like a hostile raid almost. They bring in all the bankers. It was like watching, you know, RJR Nabisco, you know, do a deal or something like this. It was just an unbelievable display of money seizing assets.
How did they do that? By just giving money to the presidential campaign for Bush, or how did that work? How did that happen?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the interesting things in the stock market is a fantastic, aggregator of information. For example, as Bush's candidacy, if you just looked at the tobacco stocks,
uh-huh.
you could tell that Bush was going to have a very good shot at getting into the White House, because the tobacco stocks kept going up and up and up. Because remember, under Clinton, they had a huge lawsuit come about,
right?
Which under Bush, most of it's been reversed. But this is a lot of money that can be work, and we know it from Karma Bank. Give an example of Karma Bank, for example. Now, you know that we come out with this idea that says that you can join together with other activists around the world through the Internet and push back against corporations by looking at their stock price.
Uh-huh.
There's a fund in Washington called the Free Enterprise Action Fund,
right?
Which is run by this guy Malloy and Tom Borelli.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw what we were doing, and they came out with a fund. So instead of being fairly and saying, well, here's our fund and here's what you guys do, let's see, let the best man win, they're so embedded in the system in such a corrupt manner that they're able to, we saw it on our site. The second they became active, there was emails to the Wall Street Journal, emails to all these internet groups that do a lot of low-level digging around and poking around, a lot of emails directly to Exxon. So they've got virtually unlimited funds. Then they've got the mouthpiece of Murdoch through Fox News, because this guy runs a thing on Fox News. They're supported by Exxon. So they've got Exxon and Murdoch News, and a guy who has no shame about going on writing, hysterical writings to get people riled up, as they do in the States on issues. They just get people riled up. They don't want any healthy debate. They don't want any intellectual discourse. Everything is, completely hysterical.
Right.
Everything is a threat. Everything is terrorism now. Everything, you know, is a cause for a complete shutdown of any kind of rational debate. I mean, this is why the U.S., the educational standards in the U.S., Madge, if you read the latest reports, you know, I think the U.S. is now number 17 out of the top 19 countries for educational standards. The U.S. in health is now 43. A list of the U.S. of various countries around the world. The quality of life in the U.S. is dropping.
Right.
Because the guys on the inside have contempt.
Well, somebody described it that I read. They described our country as a third world country with TiVos.
Well, I mean, it's when the dust settles and the bills have to get paid. You know, the only thing keeping America alive right now is all this cheap money that America borrows from China, effectively.
How does that happen? What's the mechanism behind the China thing? Because I know that we get a lot of money from China, but I don't, you know, when I spend money, I don't see yen or anything. I see, or what is in China? What do they call the money there? Chinese pesos?
The yuan.
Flan?
The yuan.
Oh.
The yuan or the renminbi?
Yuan?
The renminbi.
See, oh, okay. Let's say whatever
that's
the hell.
Chinese currency.
But how does that?
Well, There's two ways it happens. First of all, you've got the situation where China sells America cheap goods, right?
Uh-huh.
So you buy your plasma screen TVs and your other plastic gizmos and gadgets.
Right.
They manufacture in China. The average wage in China is about roughly $100 a month. That's what the average Chinese, you know, and that's up from $30 a month. So their wages are improving over there in China.
Right.
But it obviously it's a lot less than what people would be paid in America. So they make this stuff over there. It's incredibly cheap. Some people say it's slave labor. I'm not sure you can't say it isn't slave labor. It pretty well is slave labor. But they make these products. It goes to America. America gives dollars to China. So China now has a lot of dollars in exchange for the goods that they've sold into the American economy. What China does with those dollars is that they use the dollars that America's given them to buy U.S. Treasury government bonds.
Why do they do that?
To protect the value of those dollars. Because, you see, if in fact they kept debasing the wage structure, then the value of the dollar would collapse because they're basically hollowing out the economy. So unless they keep the dollar supported by buying the dollars themselves, then the value of their dollars would go down.
Now, who's
it's like vendor financing.
Who's actually buying these bonds then? Is it
the Chinese,
government?
The Bank of China.
The bank, okay.
And the Bank of Japan.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So they're buying to support because the economy is being hollowed out.
Mm-hmm.
But before it collapses, they want to make sure that they own as much as they possibly can. Because another way that this happens is, like, for example, when you take a mortgage out from Citigroup or some other bank for your house, Citigroup doesn't keep their mortgage on their books. They sell it to another bank.
Right.
And they eventually sell it to China. China is the biggest buyer of this paper. So effectively, when people are going to default on their mortgages in the United States, you know, this whole new law that came into effect in October where people can't declare bankruptcy in the same way that they could.
Right.
And interest rates are still going up and people can't pay their mortgages anymore. What they're going to find out is that they owe the money to some Chinese bank. Of course, China is not a democracy. China is still a communist country. And if you default on your debt in China, they kill you. They do state-sanctioned, the state kills you
no.
if you don't pay back your debt.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's a communist country. It hasn't changed from, remember we were talking about the Red Menace not too long ago, that there was a domino theory in Asia and Southeast Asia and the U.S. wanted
right.
to fight it all. Well, they're still there. They've gone from forced labor to forced consumption, but that's another story. But nevertheless, all that paper is owned basically by these Chinese banks. So you effectively own the paper that you owe the bank. The bank has already sold it off, and a lot of it ends up in China. So China ends up being the creditor. China is the creditor of the world, and America is the consumer of the world. These two are in this very strange global embrace and the U.S., unfortunately, is in a weaker position once this thing starts to come unglued, and that's the China story.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't want to go on too many tangents, but I mean...
That's interesting for me. That's interesting. But... So should I move back to Europe? That's what I'm thinking. Of course, it comes back to me, you know, being an insular American. I'm trying to think, Jesus, I got to get the hell out. Oy vey. Did you hear?
Well, what we talk about on our show a lot is, I mean, at least be aware of what's really going on.
Right.
Because it doesn't make any sense to be in a kind of a bubble and to buy into this whole nonsense that there aren't some alternative visions of how economies should work. And there are a lot of different ways you can work an economy. The U.S. model, the so-called neoliberal model, the Washington consensus, it's a model that's broken because it generates more garbage than it does growth. There's just too much garbage being generated. The U.S. creates 27% of the world's garbage. I mean, it just creates too much garbage. When the U.S. comes out and says we're growing at 3% a year or 3.5% a year, well, if you factor in the cost of cleaning up the garbage, it eats up more than that 3.5%. It's actually negative. It's like a big ant farm. You know, the ant farm, you don't clean it out often enough, it just soils itself, and they can't live anymore. This is the U.S. is doing this to itself. The amount of environmental degradation going on there is stunning. Listen to this statistic, Madge.
Uh-huh.
25% of all the air pollution in Los Angeles now comes from China. Were you aware of that?
What percent?
25%.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, blows over the Pacific.
Hmm.
Now, the only reason the Chinese can be operating at that rate of growth is because the U.S. keeps buying all that Chinese stuff.
Uh-huh.
So the U.S. is, in effect, killing itself. It's suicide consumption. You think you're tough. You know, you got your plasma screen TV, you got all your gizmos, and you're feeling great. But you're feeding an economy in China that's got zero environmental protection, and now 25% of the pollution in Los Angeles is coming from China. And that number is going up quite dramatically. Now, who's going to stop that? Are we going to tell China to stop polluting? Because China will say, you know what? Fuck you.
Stop buying our
shit. Our U.S. government bonds. Yeah. Now interest rates in America are 17%. Do you like that on your mortgage every month? Oh, you can't afford it? Okay, we own it now. Money work for us. You know, Warren Buffett, who's a very well-respected guy in America, has said two things. Number one, America is becoming a nation of sharecroppers. And number two, he thinks that within 5 years, Americans are going to be paying a tax to Uncle Sam and to China.
What?
That's correct.
How can
coming from Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is one of the sanest guys in the world. He's the second richest guy in the world.
How can you?
He says America's becoming a nation of sharecroppers. They're indentured servants. People are on debt. They've got student debts. They've got mortgages. They pay these credit cards to buy their you know, groceries at Albertson's grocery store. You know, it's debt. But they don't own the debt. China owns the debt. Who's going to come collecting on that debt? Just jump down, turn around, pick a bale of cotton for all y'all Americans.
Right.
Because you don't have financial independence anymore. You've lost your independence. I mean, I'm American too, but I mean, living outside of the United States, you see things from a slightly different perspective. Should you move out of the United States? I mean, at least become aware of what's going on. The economy in the United States is being sold down the river. You're being sold down. You're being sold off to China. You're being sold off. You know. So what are you going to do about it? I mean, there are things you can do about it.
So Karma Bank actually can. Yeah. Do you have any examples of how this has worked? I mean, has this actually had an impact on companies? Do you have examples?
No. Not really, because the numbers need to get higher. I mean, I know that leading into the invasion of Iraq, you had some boycotts in around Germany,
yeah,
and of Coca-Cola, and then they came out and they said, you know what, we missed our earnings by a penny, and the stock dropped by $6 billion. And that was an indication of the kind of the numbers that we're talking about. But no company has yet come out and really, you know, the proof is in the company. The company has got to come out and say Karma Bank is a factor in this quarter's numbers. Has that happened? No. Is there something out there? Is there a groundswell of activity around the world on the web, on the internet, in the chat rooms, on the blogs? It's growing because people, for the reasons that we've said. So I think it's a growing.
So what are the action?
Stacy now.
What are the Stacy, action
I'm
points?
What are referring with Stacy because she's the master keeper of all the the vital statistics. The question is an example. Yeah, weren't we just talking about something the a couple weeks ago of a... Yeah, we've had some, yeah, we're working on it. I mean, it's, the people, you see, the problem is people are very, it's, they don't want to, they have to really come to terms with the fact that there is this really bad problem, mm-hmm. first of all. And people don't want to really say, this is the problem. Most of the people think that if they give a few bucks to Friends of the Earth, or they buy, you know, a few cups of fair trade coffee. See, this is where Starbucks has made a lot of mileage on this.
Uh-huh.
That they've done their thing. They've done their bit. They've contributed to how this is all going to work out in a better way. But the problem is really systematic. It's a lot bigger than people want to really admit, because first of all, they're being told that the biggest problem in the world is terrorism, so-called terrorism from the these, you know, bad guys.
Right.
But this is not really the biggest problem. This is a problem. Yes, of course, it's a problem, but it's not a new problem. It's a problem. Yes. Is it the biggest problem? Well,
no way.
Yeah. My thinking is that the rate at which the environment is degrading, it's degrading faster. It's the biggest problem. And that's our position at Karma Bank. We say, look, the environment is really the biggest issue that we need to focus on right now. And the corporations are not incentivized to do anything about it, because it's not in their charter to take into consideration the environment. They're simply there to make money for their shareholders. Okay, that's fine. But let's not waste time trying to get corporations to act like better corporate citizens. They never will do it.
You know what? You're absolutely right. Because if you because corporations are, I actually went to business school too. I just don't remember anything because I was on LSD. But you know, we certainly learned that corporations do not have souls. A corporation is not a person. A corporation is not the chairman of the board. It is an organism unto itself, which operates solely on profit. So if what you're proposing is to sort of cut at the profit motive by making them be environmentally responsible, that's really the only thing you can do, right?
Yeah, what we're saying is, you're exactly right. We're saying that they are going to seek profits, and that's their job. But, okay, fine. So, A, cut them off from their cash supply, and B, bring into the mix another group that also has only profits on their mind. And that's the hedge fund group. You see, the hedge fund groups, see, I've got nothing against greedy people and greed. It's just that it's disproportionately being monopolized by people who are doing incredible economic and ecological damage.
Right.
If that greed can be shared in a way, dispersed in the economy, you'll have a better economy, a better ecology. Uh-huh. Two things go together. If you can get these hedge funds, who are the greediest bastards of all, to start making these negative bets against these corporations, because everybody who's against the way that these corporations are ruining the ecology are boycotting strategically in the way the Karma Bank suggests, then they will do so because it's in their interest to do so. If they make these big negative bets against Coca-Cola, they can make millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. And what we say on our site is take some of that money and give it back to the community to encourage them to do more boycotting. The community wins, the hedge fund wins, the corporation loses.
So what,
why not? The corporation can't win every time. Corporation's got to lose sometime.
So, okay, so I need to wrap up, and I wanted to ask you about your background. But first, what are some action points? What is it that you want listeners to do? What is it that they can do to take part in this system if this is what they want to do?
Well, the action point is really quite simple. Just look at the data as we see it. Figure out what company is the most vulnerable to a boycott that has a lot of people around the world who are interested in that boycott, and join the boycott. So right now it's Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Doesn't mean you have to even have an issue with Coca-Cola. You may not have any opinion about Coca-Cola whatsoever, but by joining the Coca-Cola boycott, you are joining the global citizenry who is trying to take back the economy for the people. That's what it means. It's just, Coca-Cola is just a symbol. It just happens to be the most vulnerable company with the highest number of people campaigning against it at this time. It could be somebody else in 6 months. Forget about the morality. Forget about the ethics. Forget about the board of directors. Forget about the chairman. Forget about all the allegations of all the bad things Coke's doing. Forget about all that. Just say, look, Coke's vulnerable. A lot of people are willing to boycott it. I'm going to boycott Coke because we want to create a situation where the professional money managers start attacking Coke with their negative financial bets and put Coke on the defensive, because we want to express our power as citizens that we do not accept what the corporations are doing in a way that's completely unbalanced, in a way that's causing ecological damage.
Right.
We want to make that statement. We want to make that clear. So just look at that number in that simple way and be a part of this. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. If you just stop drinking Coke for 6 months to a year, you won't notice it.
Uh-huh.
It means it's not that tough to do.
Right.
But Coke stock, if it's it begins to reflect the fact that there is this campaign that's taking position against the way these corporations are operating. So that would be the first move.
And listen to your website and follow what you guys are doing also, right? I mean, I would think so.
Yeah, well, I mean, we do our daily video blog and our daily podcast. And I'm going to go to this thing in Germany. I'm speaking at this conference for social responsible investing to talk to big banks and to get big bankers involved in making these negative bets. I have talked to people who run, my background is that I started on Wall Street. I worked on Wall Street for 7 years as a stockbroker. And then I went to Los Angeles. I started something called the Hollywood Stock Exchange. Mm-hmm. I invented the technology that runs the Hollywood Stock Exchange. So it's the same idea that's behind all these virtual markets that Time Magazine wrote a big story about last week. The Pentagon's policy analysis market, the InTrade, which is the Irish virtual market, all that stuff is based on my technology.
Is that like how NASA does it, where they borrow from each other, like the scientists? I was talking to a scientist from NASA, and he was explaining how they have their own economic system where they'll borrow from other research departments for like if I'm trying to put in a little, a vibrator in the satellite this year, and the other researcher has a budget to do a satellite next year, then I can borrow from his budget to use it for mine. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Well, no. I mean, in the case of the Pentagon, for example, they created something called the policy analysis market. They created a virtual stock exchange, and they traded the ideas of who would be attacked next as a terrorist target as a virtual market, and they use that to determine where they would spend their money. They use it as a predictive market. And that's based on my technology. They took it off because it got a lot of bad press. They called it the terror futures market. It's called the policy analysis market. And they took it offline because there was a lot of negative press about this market. But it's based on my technology, which is the virtual specialist technology, which is the basis for the Hollywood Stock Exchange, which is the online market where you can buy and sell movies and stars like stocks and bonds.
And how did you end up in France?
The second we sold the Hollywood Stock Exchange, I moved back to France because I had been living in France before I moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer France. I like France, and it's my favorite country. And if I have a chance to live in France, I prefer to live in France.
Yeah.
And I think that the Americans need to recognize they owe a great deal to the French. It's the French intellectual power that is the basis for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It's the French who came to the America's aid during the Revolutionary War, and it's the French that have given America so much. And the fact that the Americans have taken an adversarial position against France now, France will be here long after America's gone.
Yeah.
I'll say that. That's my prediction.
How were you able to move to France? Was it hard to get residency and that sort of thing, or how does that work?
Basically, I'm retired. I'm just a retired American living on a pension.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you can do that. As long as you can be self-sufficient, they don't care if you live there?
Yeah, if you're self-sufficient, that's fine. Yeah, sure. Okay. They'll take my money.
Interesting, because I guess I can move then, because I can work wherever, so.
Well, I've got some ideas on that. If you're we can exchange some emails on that.
Okay.
There's a lot of different things that can be done.
Yeah.
Um, You should definitely think about having that option.
I do. I'm definitely serious about it. The thing is, I got this girlfriend, Gussie Iskowitz. She's my semi-retarded girlfriend. And that's a whole nother story. But okay, this is great. So can you email me with links to attach to this particular podcast? And then I'll post it with that, including your site.
Yeah, I didn't come across as too shouting or whatever.
No, this is great. Because actually, my show, it's funny you talk about anger. Now, the first only the first 24 and a half of this minutes of this going serious. The only my guideline for serious is that it's about being angry and expressing outrage, so it does fit in. That's why why I was particularly interested in what you're doing. You know, it's funny because I can totally understand Bill O'Reilly, you know, in his bit where he's always screaming, and he was on Jon Stewart last week, and he's like, "Why are you so fucking angry all the time?" And Bill O'Reilly's like, "Well, it's kind of my job. I mean, he has to do that. That's part of his show." It's funny and how it does create this climate of no discourse, just screaming. I don't know.
I mean, I'd like to think that I can, I can be very vocal with these, with what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because, but anyway, what I was going to say is if in the future you have any of these economic questions, like the China trade and that type of thing.
Oh, definitely.
Since I worked on Wall Street for 7 years, you know, you get very good at kind of breaking the issues down,
right,
so that you can break them down and talk about them. So I as a resource to just, you know, if something comes up, there's an issue, there's something like the new Fed chairman or something like this, you say, look, you can call me. I'll give you 2 minutes sound bites that's easy for your audience, because I cut through all the mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, that'd be great. And also if you have something you want to say, just record it to an MP3, like a 2 or 3 minute, even 5 minutes thing, just email it to me and I'll be able to play it on the show. No problem.
Yeah. If you have like a question also, sure. You just say, oh, you know, what's going on here? I see that there's a big merger of these two telecoms. What is that all about? You know, easily we can, that'd be fine. We're happy to do it. We appreciate the fact that you've picked up on us and given us some support. So.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of things I'd love to talk about, starting with Wolfowitz and that whole business. So, but thank you very much, Max. So if you just email me whatever links to associate with this post, and then this will be, I'll post it this afternoon on Yeast Radio, and it'll be on the Sirius show tomorrow on Tuesday.
Okay.
So. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay. Take care. Bye bye.
Oh yeah. You say tomorrow?
Yeah. Who, what?
Tomorrow will be on what time?
It'll be on Sirius tomorrow. Well, it's Eastern time is 7, actually AM and PM, 7 AM and 7 PM. It repeats. Oh, no, actually,
7 a.m., 7,
well, no, it'll
7
be on
p.m.
7 p.m. Tuesday, 7 a.m. Wednesday.
7 p.m. Wednesday, Tuesday.
Right.
And the channel's what, 103 or something?
103. We're on right before Richard Simmons' workout or some crap. But, you know.
All right, man, you rock.
What's that?
All right, man, thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. Bye.
See ya.
Hurts and smells. That's enough. Okay, see ya next. Let's find a song to leave you with. God damn it. Oh, I got to talk about Mikey Pod. Okay, so Mikey Pod's doing this podcast against... Fuck the whole thing. All right, hold on. It's... I got to find this. I'm not going to blow this off. Let's see. Mikey Pod is doing... He's podcasting. He's the official podcaster for the National Coalition to... abolish the death penalty. There are not many causes that are more worthwhile than that. God, this is a long show. NCADP. Sounds like Chinese talk queen. Okay, it's the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty podcast. And you really need to subscribe to this. It's just a temporary thing when as this convention goes on. It's ncdappodcast.blogspot.com. That's ncdappodcast.blogspot.com. And let's see if I can find a closing song here. Let's see. You know what? I'm going to play this. Dave Caldebank did this in the beginning. He sent this to me. He makes these wonderful little things. But I'm going to play this at the end because it's great. Bye, everyone. See you, turd. Bow, bow. Fat.
Okay. God, did I bloat my shit?
The funny thing about that bitch is she still thinks she hot. She still thinks it's 77 and she's on the
lips. She got the leather, a red leather suit on. What the fuck you going with that shit on? Hey, her period tastes like toothbrush, Robbie.
Stinks good,
really, lesbians and gentlemen.
Ooh.